Hello, fellow law nerds. Welcome to another episode of Boom Lawyered, a Rewired.News podcast hosted by the legal journalism team that really wants to reiterate that you can no sooner abort a baby after it's been born than you can abort a 75-year-old man. I'm Imani Gandhi.
And I'm Jess Piclow. Rewire.news is dedicated to bringing you the best reproductive rights and social justice news, commentary, and analysis on the web, and the Team Legal podcast is part of that mission. So a big thanks to our subscribers and a welcome to our new listeners.
This week we're going to talk about a lawsuit that should rightfully infuriate you, so you might want to sit down and prepare yourself. We're talking about Ryan Majors' lawsuit against the Alabama Women's Center. Ryan Majors is suing the abortion clinic for wrongful death because his then 16-year-old girlfriend, with the consent of her parents, mind you, got an abortion against Majors' wishes.
Imani, someone needs to tell him that that's just not how any of this works.
You know, Jess, it's really not. But it is part of the fight for fetal personhood, and this week we're going to explain how Alabama has been smack dab in the middle of it, from their efforts to get lawyers appointed to fetuses during judicial bypass proceedings, to holding pregnant people criminally liable under child endangerment statutes, to passing a constitutional amendment giving fertilized eggs and embryos the same constitutional rights as people. And we're going to talk about why it's dangerous and wrong to write off what's happening in Alabama as, well, it's just Alabama. So let's talk about some of the details of what is going on here.
Yeah.
We've got Ryan Majors. He's this 19-year-old unemployed doofus who got a probate judge to open up an estate for a 6-week embryo and then sued the West Alabama Women's Clinic for wrongful death of that embryo.
Okay, that's a lot. This is a lot of law talk in one sentence. Let's walk through this. Let's start with wrongful death.
Wrongful death is a civil claim.
Mm-hmm.
Alabama defines wrongful death as one that is caused by, quote, the wrongful act, omission, or negligence of another.
Okay, so we've got him saying wrongful death.
Right, exactly.
All right.
And so in Alabama, unlike most states, family members of a deceased person can't sue for wrongful death. So usually in a wrongful death claim, any family member can sue. Like if I were to die, you know, my mom could sue.
Mm-hmm.
But in Alabama, it's the deceased person's estate that must sue.
Okay.
So in other words, someone has to be the legal representative of the deceased person in order to effectively assert the claim in place of that dead person, to assert the claim of wrongful death in that dead person's stead.
Okay, so Majors went and asked a probate judge to open an estate for the 6-week embryo that his then ex-girlfriend terminated and which he has decided to call Baby Roe because of course he has. I mean, every drop of this lawsuit in this story is just so gross. Okay, so he does that and the probate court says, sure, why the fuck not? And so now Majors has legal standing to sue the clinic on behalf of this embryo for wrongful death. And I'm just going to sit here for a second with that.
Yeah, let's all sit with the fact that a 6-week embryo that, as far as I know, has never owned any property, has never earned any income, has had an estate opened mm-hmm. in order for the boyfriend of a woman who got an abortion to sue on behalf of that 6-week embryo.
Absolutely. So this case is a result of Alabama voters passing Amendment 2, which added a personhood amendment to the Alabama Constitution, and also about, I'd say a decade of conservative Alabama judges and lawyers looking for ways to bake fetal personhood into other areas of the law.
And another thing that is important to note is that this lawsuit flies in the face of a lot of United States Supreme Court precedent.
It sure does.
That says that spousal notification laws are unconstitutional. If it's unconstitutional to force a pregnant woman to notify her spouse that she's getting an abortion, then it certainly has to be unconstitutional to force a 16-year-old girl to inform her 19-year-old boyfriend that she's getting an abortion before she can actually get one.
You'd think.
But the thing is, the problem that we have have is that there is already one justice on the Supreme Court who thinks that these sorts of spousal notification laws are not constitutional. Do you know who that is, Jess?
Who?
Sam Alito.
Oh, yay, Alito.
If you know this, but some of our listeners may not know this, that, you know, Planned Parenthood versus Casey, that seminal case that established the undue burden standard for abortion, Sam Alito authored the Third Circuit decision that led to Planned Parenthood versus Casey in the Supreme Court. And in that Third Circuit decision, he upheld Pennsylvania's spousal notification law. So that is to say, he might very well be in favor of granting all fathers or would-be fathers the right to veto an abortion.
Yeah, and that's where this lawsuit is going and getting us. So, you know, aside from just the fact that this is one of those what the ever-loving fuck is going on in our court system moments, Amani, why should our listeners care about this case?
Well, for one, it's lawsuits like Majors that are a stepping stone to criminalizing abortion and punishing pregnant people across the board, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also, just think about it. This would be a disaster for abuse victims. Permitting partners or family members to veto a pregnant person's choice to get an abortion, I mean, we're talking about abusive spouses, abusive boyfriends going to court to get injunctions preventing their partners from getting abortions.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's really sort of the nugget of the matter here is giving third-party people veto rights over a pregnant person's decision to terminate a pregnancy. And it's this part of this extension, this trend we've seen in Alabama to anthropomorphize embryos, right, and give them rights that supersede the rights of the pregnant people carrying them. I mean, we have to talk about this Lawyers for Fetuses bill that Alabama had, right?
Explain what that was all about, because that was a fucking hot mess.
Wow.
But I don't think fucking hot mess is a legal term, so maybe we should go into it a little bit more.
Gather around, listeners, because we have a tale for you. So, back in 2014, Alabama had a law that permitted a court to assign a lawyer for a fetus whenever they were in a judicial bypass proceeding. And what's a judicial bypass proceeding? That's where a minor who wants to terminate a pregnancy goes to the court because they either don't have the ability to get parental consent because they may not have parents to consent, or consent is not an option because it is just not a safe situation. So we've created a pathway for them called judicial bypass. Alabama said, you know what? The fetus should have a say in that. Let's give him a lawyer.
So fucking ridiculous. It's absurd. I mean, this law permits district attorneys and lawyers for fetuses to actually call witnesses to testify against the pregnant minor. I mean, think about how bizarre that is. How bizarre it must be to be a pregnant minor sitting in a witness chair, having a lawyer purporting to represent the fetus that is inside your body, and then proceeding to speak for the fetus that is inside your body as if they have any fucking clue what that fetus, which is, again, inside your body, has to say.
And let's just sit with the image of a lawyer. You and I are lawyers.
Right.
You know, going into a courtroom with a judge and a clerk and a bailiff, you know, and
court reporter.
Court reporter, all the ancillary folks that make the stuff happen in a courtroom, that we are in there and you are a 16-year-old pregnant minor. And I am going to grill you about whether or not you are mature enough to make this decision, and presumably to do so on behalf of the rights of the developing pregnancy inside of you. It's science fiction is what it is.
It's absolutely science fiction. And we need to talk about the fact that this kind of shit was going on long before Alabama even passed this law, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's science fiction turned reality.
Exactly right. And there is an attorney, this guy named Julian McPhillips. And a few years ago on The Daily Show, Jessica Williams actually did an interview with this guy.
You get a call from a fetus seeking legal representation. Then what happens?
I cannot get a call from a fetus for anything, much less legal representation.
So how do you mean confidentiality with your client?
Well, of course, if you got an unborn child in somebody else's womb, I cannot communicate with them directly. You know better than to ask the question.
Well, I don't know. You have a crazy-ass job, sir. I don't know what's in the realm of possibility and what's in the realm of not possible.
So this is a man, Julian McPhillips, who calls himself a civil rights attorney, right? And so when you think of civil rights, you're thinking about civil rights for black people, civil rights for trans people. No, he's civil rights for developing pregnancies, for embryos, fertilized eggs, blastocysts. That's his civil rights. That's his civil rights clientele.
So, not all blastocysts, I'm sorry.
So this guy, Julian McPhillips, has actually been assigned in the past to act as an attorney for a fetus. And so I just want, Jess and I are going to just play this out for you so you can see, you can hear exactly how ridiculous it is when you have an attorney cross-examining a pregnant minor on behalf of a developing pregnancy. So this is actually something that happened in a courtroom. So I'm going to be the attorney. And Jess, why don't you play the part of the pregnant minor?
Okay, I think I got that.
All right, here we go. So, you say that you are aware that God instructed you not to kill your own baby, but you want to do it anyway? And are you saying here today that notwithstanding everything, that you want to interfere with God's plan for your baby?
I think that is between me and God.
And you are not concerned, after you have had the abortion, that someday you may wake up and say, "My gosh, what have I done to my own baby?"
It may happen.
You are not worried about being haunted by this? Here you are, you have the chance to save the life of your own baby, and still you want to go ahead and snuff out the life of your own baby.
Yes.
That happened in a courtroom! That actually happened in a courtroom. There is a minor, who was being grilled by a grown-ass man about whether or not she wanted to, quote, snuff out the life of her own baby.
And, like, as God is his witness, he was actually saying that kind of shit. That poor person, oh my gosh, and however many. And I mean, so it would be one thing if it could stop there, right? But no, of course it doesn't, because the lawyer can even file an appeal on behalf of the embryo or fetus, which, guess what, is exactly what happened in the quote-unquote baby Ashley case. And the appeals court ruled that, hey, you know what, the fetus couldn't appeal.
I mean,
I don't know what to do.
The whole thing is so absurd. First of all, how did this fetus pay the retainer agreement? Most attorneys require a retainer agreement. Or if they don't work on retainer, they're going to work on contingency. Mm-hmm. So in any situation, how is the fetus supposed to pay these attorney's fees?
And I'm sorry, but I think we have some ethical models from criminal law of dual representation and conflicts of interest in these situations.
Yes.
Like, this just, I think the rules of professional conduct may want to weigh in on this. It's just, it's ridiculous.
And usually when you're in a courtroom, like, you have the chance to, I mean, it's not a criminal case, so it's not a confront your accuser kind of situation, but both sides have an opportunity to cross-examine the witnesses for each other. So here we have a situation where the pregnant person can't cross-examine the fetus. I mean, it's just, I don't understand. Help me understand.
I can't. And so the good news is the law's blocked. Right?
Yes.
So the good news is, in Alabama, that nonsense got put to bed, at least temporarily, or at least that is until this Majors lawsuit bullshit, right? Like, so here we are. Let's get back to the lawsuit and where we are in terms of the recap and what's happened so far. So according to the girl's parents, and this was reported in the Washington Post, Majors pressured their daughter into sex when he was 19 and unemployed, and she was 16 and in high school. So that's off to a great start.
Right.
Then, when she told him she was pregnant, he begged her not to terminate the pregnancy because of course he did.
Of course he did. Because he was really, really able to take care of a baby when he's 19, she's 16, and he doesn't have a goddamn job. Great.
You know? And so she and her parents got together, talked about it, and decided that the best course of action for her was to get an abortion, which she did at 6 weeks.
Right. She got a medical abortion at Alabama Women's Center at 6 weeks. Oh, and by the way, I think it's worth pointing out that Ryan Majors is not only suing the abortion clinic, but is also suing the pharmaceutical company that made the abortion pill.
Right.
Because that makes a lot of goddamn sense.
And I think it's also worth noting that getting a medication abortion at 6 weeks in Alabama is still legal. So,
right.
You know, we've got that. So if all of this is still legal and all of this is nonsense, like, what's going on? What's this case supposed to be about?
Well, the case I'll tell you what the case is supposed to be about, or at least what anti-choicers will tell you that the case is about.
What's their story?
They're going to say that the case is about father's rights. They're going to say that the case is about saving the unborn.
Mm-hmm.
And notably, men's rights activists will probably say the same thing, right? They want father's rights to trump the rights of the pregnant person, but they also want father's rights to trump parental rights as well. Also, mm-hmm. that some unemployed 19-year-old can interfere in the reproductive rights decisions that a minor has made in conjunction with her parents and her doctor.
Right. So it's all about elevating the status of the father as the ultimate decider in a relationship under whatever the circumstance. So it goes right in line with that. So
it's just fucking patriarchy is what it is. It's just patriarchal nonsense.
And that's what this case is actually about, right?
Right.
It's about controlling women.
Right.
It's about stripping pregnant people of the power of their own power and ceding power to the sperm havers, to the would-be, the purported fathers under the law. And it is once again another round of anti-choice garbage and hypocrisy. You know, and we can see this because one of the main arguments that they make is that abortion clinics are a front for allowing teen girls to be preyed on by older partners, right? That mm-hmm. abortion clinics are a big front to cover up statutory rape. And I mean, we have an unemployed 19-year-old coercing, or I'm not going to say coercing, forcing, according to her parents, a 16-year-old to have sex with him.
Yeah.
Like, talent on yourself a little bit?
Right, a little bit. Like, it's like, can you be any more blatant? And while in Alabama that's not statutory rape, because the laws about statutory rape vary from state to state, but I'm pretty sure we can all agree that in a circumstance where a 19-year-old is pressuring a 16-year-old to have sex and then trying to veto her choice and her parents' choice to get an abortion, that is wrong
mm-hmm.
and that is predatory and that is something that we shouldn't accept as a society. And moreover, what is really irritating about this case is that she's living in a state, in a community where abortion is not exactly favored.
Right.
Right? And so what happens, and this happens a lot in these judicial bypass cases as well, when you force these minors to go to court, it ends up being a community thing, right? It becomes mm-hmm. a thing that people are talking about down at the local barbershop or down at the drugstore. And so in Alabama, what has happened is this 16-year-old girl has had her entire life exposed to the public in a public lawsuit by this guy who is suing, not even suing her, because I think that mm-hmm. even he and his lawyers probably know how shitty it would look if he were to actually sue her. But instead, he's suing the clinic and the pharmaceutical company, but in the process is revealing to the world that, hey, this 16-year-old got an abortion, and who knows, maybe opening her up to harassment, to opprobrium of some sort, and that's really, really messed up.
Yeah, absolutely. It is 1,000% a function and a forum of public shaming, and that is what it's designed to do, and to send a message to other folks who may find themselves in similar situations that should you do so, you too could be shamed like this.
Exactly.
You know, and again, you know, it is this idea of trumping parental consent or the consent of the pregnant person in favor of would-be fathers or other objecting family members. I mean, we don't necessarily have a limiting principle with this. If we have an ex-boyfriend suing, we could have, you know, an uncle suing. We could have, you know, an abusive sibling sue. Like, it is wrong because it takes away the fundamental core of consent and autonomy, which, you know, here we are. Surprise, surprise.
But not really a surprise, surprise, right? Because Alabama has a history of pitting pregnant people against their own pregnancies, right?
Right, they sure do.
I mean, we talked about the Lawyers for Fetuses law that was passed mm-hmm. in 2014. It's no longer current. But, you know, I wouldn't put it past Republicans to try and pass the same law again. And also now Texas is getting in on the action. So this might become a thing. This might become the next big thing for states to try to do. And in addition, it's you know, the fact that Alabama has been trying so hard to hold pregnant people criminally liable for child endangerment while they're pregnant, despite the fact that their child endangerment statutes specifically exclude pregnant people from being held responsible for these types of things, is appalling. These child endangerment statutes are meant for, like, you know, if you're Walter White and you're bringing Walt Jr. Right. to the meth lab out in the desert in New Mexico, you're putting your child in danger because, you know what? You shouldn't have your kids around meth labs. That's what these laws are for. These laws are not for, you know, the womb as a meth lab and a drug addicted person using drugs and therefore being caught up in this criminal system when really what they need to do is be sent to rehab to be treated with kindness and compassion.
Absolutely. And I would be remiss if I didn't remind listeners that it was in large part because of the work of Roy Moore while he was on the Alabama Supreme Court that helped make that happen. Mm-hmm. And I think it's no surprise that we see those cases that he authored cited in Major's lawsuit against the Alabama clinic and the pharmaceutical company as proof of the fact that he can assert these claims on behalf of an aborted embryo. It's bananas.
It is bananas. And it's also important to recognize that it wasn't until just this past November that these sorts of lawsuits became really feasible in Alabama. Mm-hmm. Because in this past November, Alabama voters approved Amendment 2. And Amendment 2 is an amendment to the state constitutional. And it says that the policy of Alabama is to, quote, recognize and support the sanctity of unborn life and the rights of unborn children, including the right to life. And this amendment declares that there's no right to an abortion and there's no right to funding for abortion under the Alabama Constitution. So Alabama is very hostile to abortion. Mm-hmm. Alabama citizens have shown that they too are hostile to abortion, which then goes back to the public shaming thing, right? If you are a person in Alabama who has had an abortion, the chances are that you're going to be getting side-eyed just walking down the street and shamed like you're Cersei in Game of Thrones.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Is very, very, it's a real possibility.
It is. And I mean, it's absurd. And we've, you know, we've laughed about it as we're going through it in the show so far. But you really, I think, hit on the cruelty point, too, which can't be underscored enough, because this is not like there are a state full of resources for folks either. So we are putting people in very precarious situations and then now creating an even more hostile community in shame, and that's dangerous, and it makes me very mad, Imani.
Ugh, it makes me very mad too. But we should talk about how this particular case ties into just the larger agenda, the larger anti-abortion agenda, because it absolutely does, right?
Mm-hmm.
Since Trump has taken office, we've seen some of the most radical fringes of the anti-choice movement become mainstreamed.
Right. Some of them are even serving in the administration, right?
Right, exactly. You've got these people in HHS who are just essentially Alliance Defending Freedom lawyers.
Yeah, our current Solicitor General, Noel Francisco.
Oh, God, exactly. And so, you know, 6 years ago when you and I first started working together, fetal personhood was not mainstream. There were multiple attempts in multiple states to pass these personhood amendments, and they kept getting shot down. But now here we are 6 years later, and all of a sudden, fetal personhood could be a reality. I mean, it's a possibility that the Supreme Court could reverse course, because in Roe, they refused to recognize fetal personhood and say, you know what? Yeah, embryos are people too. That's really, really frightening.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's an important point with Major's lawsuit and why I tell folks not to write these things off or not to just go, well, whatever, Alabama, because it's not necessarily about winning or losing this particular lawsuit, right? It's about constantly moving that needle so that this is a conversation that we're having so that eventually a probate judge in a county in a state not Alabama says, well, you know what? That guy in Alabama said that we can open an estate for an embryo. Why can't we here in Kentucky, in Ohio, in Texas? Like, these things do have a way of multiplying like cancer cells, and so we can't write it off.
We really can't. And, you know, this is not the first time we're seeing these sorts of attacks on the judicial bypass procedure. We talked a lot about the Garza case in previous episodes, which is the case, if you may remember, where Kavanaugh essentially prohibited a pregnant minor, a pregnant immigrant minor, from obtaining an abortion. And there were shenanigans and there were petitions filed with the Supreme Court demanding that these attorneys be sanctioned because they took this poor person to get an abortion and they didn't let the government know and blah, blah, blah. The government wants to be more involved in the pregnancy decision of minors, and that's concerning.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Supreme Court, and I want to go back to that for a second, because the reality is we've got the Roberts Court packed with an anti-choice majority. So even though these are sideways attacks on abortion rights, right, like setting up an estate for an embryo, and they should be a non-starter, we just can't assume that to be true. You've already mentioned the fact that Alito has voted once to endorse what I call third-party veto rights on abortion. We mentioned Kavanaugh did that when he was on the D.C. Circuit in the Garza case. We have no reason to think Thomas wouldn't vote along those lines. I mean, Gorsuch loves natural law. He'll find a way to, you know, give rights to a developing pregnancy, I bet. I mean, you know, we've got that. And in fact, we already have a Supreme Court petition out there. It's from, you know, my state of Colorado. I don't think it's going to, you know, hopefully get anywhere. But it wants the court to declare a fertilized egg a person under the law. And this is a case that involves IVF and assisted reproductive technologies. And so when we talk about this in the context of abortion, it's also, I think, important to say, whoa, you know, the implications are so much greater than that. But we also have this conservative Catholic majority that, as dogma, is hostile to things like IVF. So would they bite on the opportunity to put this in law if given the chance? I don't know. But it's a conversation I think we need to have.
Right. And it's a conversation that we probably wouldn't have had to have 6 years ago, which is depressing. No. I mean, it's just depressing how we are devolving in abortion rights, especially after that victory we got in Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt.
It is.
So excited about that. That was 3 years ago, and now just shit is hitting the proverbial fan.
Big fart noise.
So I guess my question is, who do we blame for all the shit that's flying around?
I mean, the voters for passing Amendment 2 is, you know, like, that was a tough one. And I know advocates worked really hard, and that was a hard loss, but it's that we are going to feel the impact of Amendment 2, and I don't think we can sugarcoat that. And, you know, this is just the first little step. I expect we will see more. We know that there are a lot of conservative judges who are looking for opportunities to grab the brass ring and really go for undercutting abortion rights completely. This gives them a very good vehicle in the state to do so.
It really does. And just, you know, just to repeat for those who may have zoned out a little bit, Amendment 2 is the amendment to the state constitution that gave embryos, fertilized eggs, blastocysts, cysts, the same rights as born actual people. And,
sure did.
You know, Alabama, you know, we got to pay attention to what's going on in Alabama, because as you said, it's not just an Alabama problem. It's going to spread.
No.
It's absolutely going to spread. And so y'all need to be aware of that and be, you know, just be alert. Go fight at the capital of your state if you see this shit starting to come down the pipe. It's not a good, again, you know, buzzkill Jess and buzzkill Imani bringing you the shitty news when it comes to reproductive rights, but.
But don't write this lawsuit off as one sort of, you know, wacky, you know, thing that some silly attorney in Alabama is trying to do. It's real, and we got to pay attention to it.
It's part of a pattern.
You know, and frankly, you know, Alabama needs our love there too, so don't write them off.
They absolutely do. There are a lot of good activists, a lot of great people working in Alabama for the rights of pregnant people, so let's not write them off. So, that's going to end it for us today. If you want to continue this conversation or just be outraged with us, perhaps join us for a 10-minute scream. You can find me on Twitter at Angry Black Lady. You can find Jess on Twitter at Hegemommy, Hegemommy. You can find Rewire.news at Rewire_news. And you should and can and must join our Facebook group. It's called Boom Lawyered. Look it up. Answer the question. We'll let you write in. Jess, anything else to add?
See you on the tubes.
See you on the tubes.
Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Jessica Mason Piclo and Imani Gandhi. This episode was produced by Mark Folletti, who is also our executive producer. And the Rewire.news editor-in-chief is Jody Jacobson.